Red Beard Podcast is brought to you by these cool dudes.
Hell yeah, these cool dudes. What's going on, man? This is Tony, and I got Cooley here. What's going on, bro?
What up?
Dude, wearing your zombie outbreak response team shirt.
Yeah, because that's what I do, bro.
Like, bro, do you think the apocalypse is actually going to happen?
No, because I am on the zombie outbreak response team, which means that that shit will never happen because I am on watch 24/7.
Yeah, but that means if there's an outbreak, it's already happened, bro. Like, you're, what you just said is very contradictory to the shirt you're wearing. If it's an outbreak, that means that you're responding to what has already happened.
Yeah, but I'm responding to it and shutting that shit down immediately, so you'll never see it.
All right, usually that's like a single case, not an outbreak.
So there might be three or four, you know what I mean? Like,
that's an outbreak.
By the time I see it. Yeah. Yeah, no, because it outbroke. It outbroke from one to like three or four, right?
So,
yeah.
All right. It outbroke from three to four.
So then I take care of all that shit, and then y'all don't see it because I'm a superhero.
What's your superpower, man?
Fucking up zombie outbreaks.
That's it. I think that's a skill, bro. It's not a superpower. A superpower is like, yo, I can fly. Not like, yo, I fuck up zombies, bro. So, oh, man. All right. So, yo, it might come as a surprise to you, but not because we kind of already talked about it. I mean, ahead of recording, because, oh, my God, we actually have lives outside of recording. Dude, I finished season one of The Boys 2 weeks ago, after we recorded our last episode, and I have to tell you, pleasantly surprised and very impressed by it. I will give you props on recommending it. I just, dude, like I said last episode, I think it was just like a crazy time for me where it was like, yo, you gotta watch the show, and I'm like, I have a 3-month-old and I don't have time for anything, so it was like all very overwhelming. But I've had some time off, and I was able to sit down and bang out the first season, and dude, it was fucking awesome.
Dude, I feel like now that you have a daughter,
yeah,
that's gonna give you whatever excuse you need now, because like before you had a daughter, yeah, it was still, I don't have time, man. And like when I'd ask you why you don't have time, you'd be like, I gotta work out, or I got.
I never said I had to work out. let's be real, bro.
Now it's like, you know, I got a 3-month-old daughter, and it's like, and I can't say anything to that. I can't be like, yeah, bro, screw that.
No, legit. It's the perfect excuse, right? Like, to get out of anything, I guess, if you wanted to use that. But
yeah.
But I mean, like, I don't do that. And honestly, I'm just being real with you. Like, dude, when I thought I had no time before, like, I legit have no time now. Like, I literally have to plan it out ahead of time to make sure that I can, like, literally fit it in, because it's like, it all circles around, like, is she going to be awake? Is she going to be sleeping? Now we have her upstairs in the crib where, like, if I'm watching TV, it's not going to disturb her. Before, like, she was always in the same room. So if I was watching TV, it was waking her up. It's like, dude, it's crazy. Like, it's a lot. And I never understood what people said before when they said, you're not going to have any time when you have kids. I'm like, nah, I'll make it work. But, like, there's a reason why people say that.
Yeah, but it's cool, though, because it'll go by, like it's going to go by super fast, and you're going to, before you know it, like, she's going to be going to prom and you're going
to
be, yeah,
and
like,
then I'll be dead. Yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait to just, I can't wait for everything to go 90 miles per hour for the rest of my life. So now, basically, now, dude, I've already hit the peak. Now, what you're saying is I'm just dying. It's what you're saying. But no, dude, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. I couldn't be happier. But on a side note, season one, The Boys.
Yeah, The Boys.
Dude, awesome. Elizabeth Shue was fantastic. Obviously, shout out to the 80s queen, my first love. I friggin' love her. She was awesome in this. I gotta say, though, that the guy who played Homelander, it takes a special person to play a really messed up personality like he had.
Anthony
and their
Starr
relationship was very challenging, which... And yo, spoilers, but like, if you did not see it coming, I mean, like, obviously they were very, she was doing everything he wanted, and to even on a sexual level, because she was afraid of him, which is really disturbing when you think about it. Like, oh, I'm so afraid that I will pretend to like you in a sexual way so that you don't rip me apart. Like, I thought that was a little disturbing.
Right, exactly. And he's... That dude is amazing. His name is Anthony Starr. He played in Banshee, which is another show that if you haven't seen it, dude, it's fantastic. And it's a completely different character. He plays a dude named Lucas Hood, who's basically he's a convict, somebody who's like, you know, on the run and whatnot, and like he's on the run and he gets into this town or whatever, and the sheriff, he finds the sheriff is dead, he wasn't actually the sheriff, it was a guy that was like going to go and assume the role of sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nobody had ever seen the guy before. So he takes his identity and goes and becomes the sheriff of that town.
Yep.
Time's up, right? So I can't. All right.
No. Basically, just my alarm went off. It's not a big deal. Keep going. Yeah.
All right. Word.
all right. Word.
No, I thought you were saying, hey, no, done.
If time's up, I'll just say that's enough, bro.
But yeah, no. He plays Lucas Hood. You know, he finds the sheriff dead and assumes his life and becomes the new sheriff of this town. So he's the lawman.
Yeah.
Now, when his real life identity is a hardened criminal, but he's badass. Like, he's one of these guys that's just like, he don't fuck with this guy because he can take you out with like four moves or whatever.
I would believe it, man. I mean, because he's a phenomenal actor. He really is. I mean, like, even though it's like a show based in like a superhero world, I mean, like, and he's a superhero and it's all fictional, like, he played that part really well. I think what this show did well is it actually really showed you what would happen in a world where superheroes were actually real, because it really came down to they fell into a whole marketing scheme.
Mm.
Like, it was no longer about them being superheroes. It's literally about the people of Earth being like, awesome, superheroes exist. Cool, that's awesome. Thanks for helping us out. But how can we make money off this?
Right.
And I thought that was really, that was probably the most realistic approach to superheroes. Like, it would no longer be about their abilities. It'd be like, how can we capitalize on this? And that's how fucked up we are.
Dude, think about this, right? And the thing about the boys, and I don't know if I touched on this in the last episode, but I'd like to touch on it now. And the reason why I didn't before, I think, is because you hadn't seen the whole thing. And
right.
I didn't want to give any spoilers to the people that were listening. But one of the biggest things that they did in this show, one of the greatest achievements, is how real they made the personas of the superheroes. Like, so like every quirk and every fucked up personality trait that they have stems from the superpower that they grew up with.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know what I mean? So like you have, you know, friggin' A-Train, whose power is super speed, and his personality quirk is just he's gonna go, you know, faster. He just wants to be the fastest. He wants to go faster, faster, faster. Fuck everything else. He just wants to be on the go all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'll do it at no matter what the cost. So he ends up becoming addicted to this compound V thing because it cranks him up and it gets him to go faster and makes him the fastest.
Right.
And it's all an ego thing for him, right?
Yeah, well, it's like weightlifters and steroids. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's
the same thing. Yeah. And it really comes down to like it being like an athlete thing. Like,
yeah.
It's more he's the quintessential star athlete, the diva, the prima donna, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have like Anthony Starr, who grew up being able to fucking see through walls, right? So naturally, this guy's just a fucking creep.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he's invincible. He can fly. He's super strong. He's the perfect being.
Mm-hmm.
So A, you can't tell him shit because in his mind he's God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, come on, man.
I mean, if you could do all
that, no matter how you were raised, how
you do
you
not
think
apply
you would
to
feel,
the
right?
rules, bro.
Exactly.
Like the
and when
rules
you can
don't apply
see
to
through
you at
walls.
All. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just be a creep and just spy on people whenever you fucking felt like it, right? Like, and that's the personality quirk that he has. And then you have the guy that turns invisible. I forget his name.
Yeah, I forgot his name too. But yo, that guy is legit Hollow Man.
Yeah.
like, you know what I'm saying? That's who he was, who he is.
Translucent.
Translucent, of course. Yeah. That would make sense because that's what he does.
Yeah, so translucent, yeah. Right? Dude. If how many times when you were younger, like when let's say walk into a female locker room, yeah, like say between the ages of 13 and 16.
Are you kidding me, dude? I would, yeah, of course.
Fucking now, bro. I'm 46. If I had the ability to turn invisible, I'm a fucking creep.
Let's
man.
Be real. Yo, get into the strip club for free.
Yeah.
Imagine. Oh my god, dude.
Yeah, like straight up, there's so many things I'm doing if I can turn invisible, man. Mm. And like that, and that's just the thing. Like so, like these characters, they all. they're all just realistically
gifted,
psychologically profiled. You know what I mean? Everything is sculpted from the ground up, thinking how this person would be if they were raised with these powers, and they nailed it.
They really did nail it. It was awful. It was great, but it was awful when you see the realism of it. Like, who's the guy? Like the Aquaman dude? What's his name?
The Deep.
Yeah, like legit. Like he was so messed up, dude. Just like dropping his pants in like the second episode. I was like, oh wow.
That was the first episode.
Never mind. It's like
the first 15 minutes of the episode, bro.
Yeah, yeah. It was nuts. I mean, it was great. I realized in that moment how real the show was. I was like, okay, this is different than what I thought. And like when
A-Train, that was the moment that I was like, oh shit, this show is gonna be dope.
And when A-Train ran through like.
Yeah.
What's his face? His girlfriend. Robin. And like Robin ran through Robin legit, and you see a slow motion capture of like blood everywhere, a part of her spine, one of her organs. It was like a
jawbone.
I was like, dude, this is like the detail that went into that, like that after effect was phenomenal. And I was like, yo, somebody thought about like how screwed up would it be to literally have someone run through your girlfriend accidentally. And then everything slows down, but like imagine Garth Ennis. You saw like her.
Garth Ennis thought that.
I'm just saying though, yes. That's legit. That was fucked
so
up.
So everything in the show, maybe not everything.
Well, I heard most from what happens stuff. Is I heard that Homelander, like that whole birth thing with his like with Butcher's wife,
mm-hmm.
like yeah, it literally like bursts out of her apparently, like in the comic book.
And yeah, so
like,
she dies.
Even darker, like yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that's dark, man. Like that's dark superhero shit.
The comics were just an amazing departure from anything that had come before. Garth Ennis is a brilliant mind. Everything that he does is wonderfully disgusting.
I would love to actually read more or like research more of his stuff because of the show.
Oh yeah, no, I'll put you on to like.
Let me know, dude.
Yeah, because the show Preacher
was based
on a Garth Ennis comic,
which makes sense because Seth Rogen and also did that. Yeah,
correct. So. And Preacher is my 100% no question favorite comic book of all time. From start to finish, it's a beautiful commentary on just, you know, how we believe in God and all this other shit and all the things that come with it as far as like for, you know, how we treat each other as human beings and stuff like that. And it's just great. And it's disgusting and it's wonderful and it's relevant and it's all of those things rolled into one. And the artwork is fantastic too, so I'll put you onto that. No problem.
Please
no
do,
doubt.
Man. I'd love to actually check it out.
But yeah, no, this show, if you haven't seen it, it doesn't follow the comic book panel for panel. It does take liberties, and it does it in a way that is fine. Like there are plenty of things out there that they take liberties and they do what they want to do with the material, and I hate that because I feel like the person that created this and the people that wrote this stuff, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. How dare you pretend to think that you know better, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes from a place of respect and reverence for the source material and you say, okay, well, we just want to make it work for a wider audience and we want to bring it to the screen and we want to bring it to life in a way that works on camera and on film, then for me, that's great because it comes with love and respect and you can tell that they loved the source material because they nailed it 100%. The acting's 100% perfect all the way through.
And I will say, dude, spoiler alert, I did not actually see him literally burning holes through Elizabeth Shue's eyes. I was like, what the fuck?
Yep.
Like, she's done. She's done, which makes sense because she's got to film Cobra Kai 3. I'm not opposed to it. I love to see her come back as her character. I can't wait as Allie. So, can't wait. But I'm just saying, like, crazy, bro.
Dude, I can't wait for season 2.
Yeah.
And they like this
and the ending, yo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Dude,
people are terrified of him, of Homelander.
Yeah.
That's why they do what he wants.
Yeah.
He's messed up.
What is up with what is Butcher going to do is what I'm thinking. Like how does he move on from this?
Oh, like, he's going to destroy him at somehow, dude. He's going to destroy him.
Well, I mean, how do you destroy Homelander?
He's going to figure it out, dude. Superman has kryptonite, bro. I'm sure the Homelander has a weakness.
But I'm saying, in the situation that he's in.
Yeah.
Right? So, for those of you that are listening, block your ears if you haven't seen this, or fast forward, whatever the fuck you want to do.
Fast forward like 30
this
seconds.
This is digital.
30 so seconds, go.
This is digital. There are so many fucking ways you can not hear what I'm about to say.
Yeah,
so,
or just turn it up to like times two and we talk like the Micro Machines guy.
Yeah. So listen, the scene that I'm talking about is when he wakes up and he's standing outside what is now his wife's house.
Yep.
And she's living there with her son,
mm-hmm.
which
is isn't Homelander's his son. Yeah.
It's Homelander's son, which we find out is the product of what he thought was a rape, but appears that it wasn't, because, I mean, Homelander's Homelander. If he was raping her, that would have been a lot more brutal than what it turned out, because she didn't have
That's not what I get at all.
Did you get that? Raped or forced?
I got that she was raped, right?
Fear?
I think it was a little bit of fear, but I think Homelander, this is gonna be graphic as shit, but I think Homelander has control over his powers, right? So I think he used enough force to rape her, but not hurt her. Two, I also feel like she is now in a position where she had the kid, doesn't want to hurt Butcher, but at the same time is like, I can't hurt him by letting him know that I got raped and I'm having Homelander's kid, so I'm going to remove myself from the situation, and that's probably going to hurt him less than knowing that I got raped, I think, or some way. But I think, like, now I can't do anything, because if I do try to tell Homelander, or if I do try to tell Butcher, Homelander's going to kill me, right? So I have to live this other life while knowing that I hurt Butcher, with him thinking that I disappeared or possibly died.
Well, here's
that's what I thought.
My theory was more that, you know, she got the assignment of a lifetime working with him as his PR agent, and they hit it off, and he's a superhero, very famous one. I'm not a great judge of how people look, but he's not a bad looking dude.
Mm.
And I think they hit it off, and he has no morals, so he didn't give a shit, and he pressed, and she
didn't look too happy, dude.
She, when she came out, she looked guilty, not terrified. You feel me?
She was buttoning her stuff up,
and she went, and she
sat down.
I thought
she was terrified.
And I think she sat down because she was like, what the fuck did I do? What am I going to do now? And then when she found out that she was pregnant, I am 100% positive that the corporation paid her off.
I'm not thinking about
like
that. Maybe I'm thinking that. No, I'm talking about the end when she saw Homelander. I think she was like, she looked like, oh my God, he knows now. I don't know what to do. I'm scared because Homelander's gonna hurt me. That's what I.
That
got
could
from
also
that.
Be true as well. But I mean, did she not see Butcher? Because I can't remember.
Well, whatever. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
I want to know how he gets out of it, though, because he's there. Homelander's there. Where does Butcher go, and how does he get out of it? How does he leave?
And that's why we have season two.
Word.
Yo. I will say, you know, dude, I haven't been blown away by things in a while. It's been a long time since something has come out that has actually really grabbed me and made me very, very interested. And like, I have a super big drive now to see this movie. And this movie is because of the trailer that just came out regarding it, which is the final trailer for Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Todd Phillips. This movie is going to be phenomenal. I think one of the greatest things about this movie, I was watching an interview recently with Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix. And Joaquin Phoenix specifically talked about how he actually created his laugh for the Joker, which I thought in itself was just like super eerie. Now, if you actually haven't seen the Joker trailer, I urge you to watch it because that was actually Joaquin Phoenix's laugh. And apparently, Todd Phillips actually said that he met with Joaquin Phoenix because Joaquin asked him to meet with him even though he had already gotten the role, because he wanted to audition the different laughs that he had for the Joker. And they spent like a good like half hour to almost 2 hours literally just going over the different laughs that he had, which I think is pretty crazy. Now, what do you think of that laugh?
I mean, bro.
Bro, and you're a big, obviously we're all big Batman fans and Joker fans, so I really wanted to know what you had, what your impression was on that.
I think hearing it sans video.
Yeah.
Hearing it without the performance or the context, I think it's overdone.
Thank you.
I think it's like blah.
Thank you.
Right?
Dude, but, oh my God, I'm so glad
but
you
I
said
think,
that.
But I think when you watch the trailer,
yes,
and you see like when he does it and like how it comes out of his mouth and the look on his face and all of the things that go with it physically, it's, man, it's perfect. It's great. It's chilling. It's, yeah.
Dude, you could have not responded. I was hoping, I thought you were going to respond a different way, but I'm glad you responded that way. Because when I watched that trailer, dude, and you saw him actually laugh, and then right after he laughed, he went stone face.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how psychotic he is.
Right.
And like, that is literally, dude, I have read The Killing Joke so many goddamn times because I'm trying to get more out of it. Like, I'm like, oh, maybe there's something I missed, right? But it's like, it shows you how this guy was like this failed stand-up comedian.
Right.
And like, as somebody who's done stand-up for 4 years and done comedy, like, when you bomb, it is the worst feeling in the world. And I can't imagine, this guy's done it over and over again and just getting shit on him. And like, it has a mental like effect on you, bro.
Just for
a clarification, though.
Just for clarification, I mean, and I know you didn't say that this was the case, but I just want people to understand because you said it. This is not like a film adaptation of
it's
The
not.
Killing Joke.
It is not. Yeah, I'm just saying referencing that in The Killing Joke, he was also referenced as a failed stand-up comedian.
I anticipate that this is going to borrow from...
Of course.
From The Killing Joke. It's going to borrow from multiple sources, but this is most likely... You know, Todd Phillips movie, right? Like this is his Joker, his version of what made the Joker who he is. And dude, like everything about it, just I want to know more. And this is something that you, all right, I can tell you that I hate DC movies.
Yeah, of course.
Right? The majority of them. There are some that hold a place in my heart. The first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve. The second Christopher Reeve Superman movie.
It's great.
The third one was all right with Richard Pryor. I love Richard Pryor. Love Christopher Reeve Superman. The two together were not chocolate and peanut butter, but they were all right. Maybe peanut butter and broccoli. I don't know.
Like, what the hell?
Exactly, right? That's how I felt. What the hell?
That sounds like a fucking night on the toilet.
But it kind of played like a night on the toilet on the screen. But and Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, fuck that.
What was that?
That was just, it was exactly, it was, that's how I felt too. What was that?
You need to explain it. That was rhetoric, I think.
All right. So the first two Superman movies, the Tim Burton Batman movie, the fucking... The Christopher Nolan movies, minus the third one, because I thought one was trash.
Yeah.
Those DC movies, fine. Everything that they've done since, Wonder Woman was good, wasn't the best movie ever.
I like how
you're going
through all of them.
Yeah.
like we get it. There was some that you liked.
Aquaman was good.
let's go through all of them.
The rest were trash. and
like Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and when I saw...
Excuse me.
And when I saw the trailer for the Joker, not the trailer, but like that first image, I think the best thing that they could have done is release that first image where you look at it and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, dude, it was all marketing.
Fuck this movie,
all
right?
Marketing.
And so they released this shit and I'm looking at it. This is going to be trash. This is bullshit. Look at this fucking stupid. Why does he look like that, right?
Yeah,
and you're looking
at
it and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? This is the most iconic villain in history.
Yeah.
And you're fucking shitting on it, right? Yeah, and I'm looking at him like, fuck DC. And then, like, they do some more shit. They release a couple more things. And I'm like, this is fucking dumb. And then they release the first trailer. And the first trailer was like, oh, they might have something here, right? Like, you're looking at it and you're like, this looks pretty dark, pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty good. Like, you really don't get much out of it, though, because it's mostly just that, you know, they're playing that, like, you know, sick version.
The
of,
troubled guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're looking at it, and you're like, okay, but now this trailer comes out, and it's like, dude, you compare it to what you thought was going to happen when you see that first image, and you look at it now, and you finally see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Todd Phillips, hats off to you. Your version of Gotham looks like a fucking old school Brooklyn.
Yeah, that yeah, like, it does.
Like, it looks like I'm about to watch, like, Goodfellas or you know, like, maybe... you know, what's that other movie? Fucking A Bronx Tale, right?
Bronx
like,
Tale,
it
yeah.
It looks like I'm stepping into one of those. And, like, it just, I don't know, everything about it. De Niro's role in this, like, you get to see, like, all of these things. Zazie Beetz
in it. Yeah, seeing De Niro's in it is really cool, man. Yeah. To see him have a part in this as well. Yep. I mean, I think what they did with the fourth trailer was brilliant. They really gave you a sense of, you know, the origin story of this character. You mean like he started out as a normal guy, but it's all of the social interactions that he's had over the course of his life to this present moment that have created this person that is, you know, generally I think wants to be a happy guy, wants to be, you know, positive in a way, but
right.
But the world itself or the Gotham world that he's living in is constantly dragging him down, forcing him to be this other person that he doesn't necessarily want to be, but eventually succumbs to it. And I think for me, one of the most powerful moments of the trailer it's when he talks about, like, the negative thoughts that he's having, and this is basically that clip right here.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
No one's listening to him. He's looking for help because he knows that where he's going is the wrong avenue. And eventually it's almost like the world is a weight on his shoulders. And he's just like, you know what? Like, I'm done. And I'm going to check out and I'm going to go where I feel like all this negativity is pushing me. And I feel like that is exactly where that switch just flips to a completely 180. And we get to see how this guy, this normal guy, became one of the most iconic villains of all time. And that is, for me, one of the most, it is the most interesting story mm-hmm. ever. Because I feel like there's not enough about that. There right. is, but not enough.
Right.
Like, you really want to know, like, what the fuck happened to this guy? You know what I mean? You know, so, and I love what Todd Phillips is doing with this. And I got to say, man, I was one of those people that literally was like, really, man? Like, The Hangover and Old School? Like, what are you going to do with this Joker film? And I feel like this is his breakout film to show people that he can do something completely different. It's a really iconic, dramatic role. And he couldn't have picked anybody better than Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, like, I was like, really? The Joker, Joaquin Phoenix? We even did an episode about it, like, about a year and a half ago, where we were like, oh, that doesn't make sense. But, like, dude, you see this trailer and you're like, that's why there's casting agents.
He lost a ton of weight.
He's skinny and freaking machinist Christian Bale-ish. I mean, like, the guy looks phenomenal, and he is one of those actors that I think is unbelievable. He's always been unbelievable. I mean, he's like a gladiator, you know, but he's still underrated. I think what threw him off the radar was that movie where he did with, I just lost his name. Casey Affleck. Casey Affleck was the director of, I think it's, I might be way off of
Her?
This. I think it's called No, This Is Not Me. Where like Joaquin Phoenix like grew his hair out, long beard, glasses, went on Letterman, said he was like giving up acting, was retiring, he was becoming a rapper. And it was all about like how reality TV people believe.
I remember that. He was wearing those like round glasses, right?
Yeah,
like,
and that was all bullshit for this documentary.
He looked like a Frenchman.
It was all bullshit for a documentary. And people, and that's how good he is. Like, it was method. That's method acting. So when he actually takes a role seriously, that's an example of how serious he takes this. And he did this with this role of the Joker, and I think it's phenomenal.
Dude, this is... So what DC did with this movie... First, let me just say, like, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but the reviews, there are people that there are a lot of critics out there, like real movie critics, not just people that watch superhero movies and stuff, that have watched this movie in a pre-screening, and they released their reviews and they are raving about this movie. They're saying that this movie is perfect. It's a masterpiece. It's, you know, one of the best films, let alone superhero films. They're already saying that Joaquin needs to win an Oscar for this.
I watched the trailer and I say, can we just give him the Oscar?
Yeah, really. So hats off to them for that. But what DC and Warner Brothers has done here, and this is what they haven't done in the past, they've finally given something to a director and said, do what you want with it.
Which I think is brilliant.
And they didn't interfere. This is something that Marvel has been doing for over a decade now. I think the only movie that they actually, you know, interfered with, or the only two movies that I think they really interfered with and kept the director from, like, putting their true vision on the screen were Ant-Man and Iron Man 2, where, you know, they stopped Jon Favreau from actually exploring the demon in the bottle storyline, where they show Tony as an alcoholic and stuff like that. We got a brief scene where he, like, you know, tore up his party and was like a raving lunatic as a drunk, but it didn't show as a problem for him, which is what it was in the comics. But those are the only two instances where I felt like they didn't give them free rein. But DC's been, you know, sticking their hand in the honeypot way too much, and it looks like they finally stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. It's sad that it has to be in a movie about a villain that they're finally getting it right. I still want to see a good, like, where they let somebody just run with Batman, and I'm hoping that that's what they do with Matt Reeves' movie. I'll tell you, I had like really shitty reaction to Joaquin Phoenix being the Joker, and I take it back now, and I'm hoping that I take back my reaction to this fuckface, Edward Cullen, whatever the fuck his real name is.
Becoming Batman.
Batman. Yeah, like that was like, I'm looking at that and I'm like, dude, like this guy, like I haven't seen him in anything.
Edward Cullen, basically Robert Pattinson, the guy saying, yes, the guy who played the main vampire in Twilight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I think that's really weird. But then again, the only thing I've ever really seen him in was in Twilight and standing next to Kristen Stewart. So I have no fucking idea what he can bring to the table. So hopefully I'm wrong about that as well. And they let Matt Reeves deliver the movie that he wants to deliver. They already fucked it up with Ben Affleck, who was going to give us the fucking fight of the decade with, Deathstroke and Batman facing off against each other. And I'm really pissed we're not going to get that. Unless we do get it, who knows? But yeah, I mean, that's my two cents.
I will say I'm looking at, you know, IGN's website, and they have a really cool, verdict on the movie. And basically all it says is this, is that Joker isn't just an awesome comic book movie, it's an awesome movie, period. It offers no easy answers to the unsettling questions it raises about a cruel society in decline. Joaquin Phoenix's fully committed performance and Todd Phillips' masterful reinvention of the DC source material make Joker a film that should leave comic book fans and non-fans alike disturbed and moved in all the right ways. Yeah. And I mean, I think that is just perfect. I mean, like, it's not necessarily like going to be exactly comic book material, but if it disturbs you in some way, that is exactly what is going on in the Joker's head, man. I mean, he is a disturbed person, which why he does the things that he does. So if you're disturbed by it, then hey, you know, Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix did their job, and I for one cannot wait to see this movie, and I will be there on opening night.
I can't wait to see it either, and I'm sure all you can't wait to see it. It comes out on October 4th. So make sure you get your tickets in advance and go check it out. Support a film that is done the right way.
Hell yeah.
And since we were just talking about the Joker, I mean, I feel like I need to talk about Batman. I mean, we haven't done this in so long.
Hell yeah.
And this is something that I would have talked about because we talked a little bit about Tom King and what he's been doing, but he's been taking it to the next level, man. Like he's killing it on the Batman comic. Anybody who's been reading this, I applaud you. Anybody who hasn't been reading this, you need to fucking do it. You need to just give up the whole idea that comics are for kids. Go and buy every copy of, you know, Tom King's Batman Run, or go and get yourself the hardcovers or the soft cover trade paperbacks, whatever you got to do, but go and read this shit. Get it digitally through DC Comics Online. Whatever you got to do, do it, because it's phenomenal. I mean, it starts with like just what seems like a regular Batman story, and you're like, okay, guy's doing his thing. He's building up the character, and you know, you're seeing all these little different things happening, but little do you know, he's laying the groundwork for what's to come. I mean, this leads to, you know, the whole, you know, Catwoman marriage thing, where, you know, she gets cold feet and takes off. This leads to, you know, this whole, I mean, like during the whole storyline where he's, you know, gearing up to get married to Catwoman, like there's this whole thing where he gets, there's like Poison Ivy takes over, basically takes over the world almost. But you know, that leads into this other thing that he did called Heroes in Crisis, which was another phenomenal story, but we'll get into that another time. Everything that he does lays the groundwork for something else. And now we're in this world in Gotham. Like if you were to pick up a Batman book right now and you haven't been reading Tom King shit, you'd be scratching the shit out of your head, because now when you read Batman, you have Thomas Wayne, who is Batman's father, who is, you know, kind of visiting from another alternate dimension or some shit. These worlds have been combined. Thomas Wayne is now Batman of Gotham City, because Batman has been ostracized. He's been kicked out. The whole Batman, Robin, all fucking three Robins, Nightwing, Batgirl, Catwoman, all them motherfuckers are gone because Bane took over Gotham. The criminals are running shit. Everybody, like, you have like killers and the Scarecrow and people like that. They're fucking cops in this Gotham City that Bane is running. There was a major fucking character death in this last issue that just came out, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but it is fucking major, like blow your mind major. Tom King is not taking his foot off the gas, and dude, it's a fucking run, bro.
All I can say is that I was personally blown away from meeting Tom King in person and realizing that he used to be in the CIA. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, yep. That alone was a little intimidating, but I mean, like, you meet the guy and he's a super nice guy. And I was like, hey, man, like, nice to meet you. You know, he signed a comic book. He's a super dope dude. And he was just, like, really nice to talk to. So I am, like, super stoked about his success, man, because I feel like if anybody that we didn't expect to write Batman wrote Batman and has done this well with it is mm-hmm. is awesome. And I feel like he's really like he's flipping the script on its head, you know, and I don't think people expected that. And I feel like fans are always complaining about, like, you know, oh, I you know, this doesn't work or this doesn't work. But it's like now he's doing something that fans didn't expect and it's surprising them. And I think this is something that they're going to remember. Hence, this is why they're going to actually like it. Because it's a switch from what we're used to. You know, you need to push people out of their comfort zone.
And we have that. We have that signed comic to give away, don't we?
We do, man. Yeah. It's a signed Tom King Batman comic that we want to give away. So.
And isn't it the issue where he gets married?
I believe so,
I think it's number 50, right?
It's a sick cover, man. It's all black and white. And, you know, Tom King's signature is on that shit. So, yo, we're going to be doing a giveaway soon, so you guys need to stay tuned. Make sure you listen to our episodes. You check us out because we have a lot of stuff to give away. Also,
we're trying to figure out a very creative way to make
it happen. We have some stuff. We're going to let you guys know next episode. But I will tell you that Hector Rodriguez, I've mentioned this guy's name a bunch in the past. Hector Rodriguez through Gilworks Publications is a super talented artist. Excuse me, it's my Rhode Island coming out. Artist. Actually did a really, really amazing print for The Walking Dead. Walking Dead is going into its last season, guys. So get ready. And The Walking Dead comics have officially come to a close, which is crazy because we didn't actually know when Robert Kirkman was going to do that, but it has been done. So just to let you know, the print that he did was amazing. And I think that you guys would be more than happy to own a copy of it. We have more than one copy. We will be giving that away. So please stay tuned. It's going to be badass.
And I can tell you, I was
to give that away.
Equally pissed and impressed when he snuck that last issue in.
Yeah, you were. I talked to you about it pretty soon after you had actually finished it, and you were like, I'm not too thrilled about it. But at the same time, it seems like you've had some time to digest it.
Well, I mean, the problem was that he didn't, there was no announcement. There was no.
I don't think he wanted to, man.
Well, no, not only was there no announcement, but he went out of his way to trick people into thinking that there was an issue 94 and 95. I mean, 194, 195, yeah. Right? But 193 was the last of it. So if you opened up a previews magazine, there were solicitations for issue 194, issue 195, so on and so forth. They were fake, 100%, and this was fully planned, and he admitted this, to throw people off so that it wasn't announced that this was the last issue, so that it was underordered, and it became a hot item or a sought-after book, which, thank you for making it hard to get, but unfortunately that meant I couldn't get it, so
yeah.
So now I don't have the book, so like I'm a little upset about that, because you know what that did was it just sent speculators through the fucking roof, and they all went running for the book, and people that don't,
and that's a cool phone call that I got, ignore that,
and people that don't even read the comic or care about the book went out to go and buy it. And bought multiple copies, and I'm fucking pissed about it. So anyway, thanks for that, Robert Kirkman, but also thank you for giving me 193 issues of the best fucking comic book created.
Hell yeah.
Ongoing series.
Amen, I mean, to that. So I would just say, but keep listening, because we're definitely going to be giving away that Tom King comic book, and you could have a copy of it. So boom.
Mm-hmm.
But you are also, dude, I know that recently you've been talking a lot about Jonathan Hickman and what he's been doing on X-Men. So, dude, what's going on?
Like, real quick, Fox had the rights to the X-Men movies. And just to give you an idea of how bad they sucked, in the last one, Dark Phoenix, Rob just sent me a picture. The president of the United States had a phone on his desk with a button on it. One button, and it was a giant X. So the president had a direct line to the X-Men. In no way, shape, or form in any fucking comic book did the president and the X-Men have any kind of relationship, because X-Men were mutants, and mutants were feared and hated by the normal human population. Any president that had a relationship with mutants would have been ostracized and kicked out of office. So fuck that. Fuck Fox. Best news is that Disney bought Fox.
Yep.
So now all of that shit doesn't mean anything. So fuck Dark Phoenix and all the shit that came before it. So here's what's going on. Disney bought Fox. X-Men's now in the Marvel universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe fold. So they want to start promoting the X-Men. So instead of turning out shitty books like they have been for the last fucking, I want to say 10, 15 years. Granted, they were peppered with some good shit here and there. Bendis did some shit. There were some things from other people that was actually pretty good, but nothing was consistent. But now what they're trying to do is they're trying to tear it down, rebuild it, and revamp it. And they're doing that, and they're doing it in a major fucking way. So Jonathan Hickman, writer of East of West, and he also did the whole like Infinity Saga for Marvel, or the Infinity miniseries, I should say. That sprung out of Avengers and Avengers World that he rebooted when they did Marvel Now. Both very successful. He's now doing the X-Men. He's relaunching the X-Men and doing something very special with them. House of X, Powers of 10, two books. They're the only books on the market right now. Everything else X-Men related has been canceled. Done.
Wow. Finis. That's nuts.
So the only thing you have to worry about, House of X, Powers of 10. These two books, they work together. You really should not read one without the other, but you definitely should not read Powers of 10 without reading House of X, because Powers of 10 actually kind of fills in a lot of blanks that House of X, mm-hmm. Leaves hanging. So the two actually work together to fill in what they both leave out and actually raise questions for the next issue, so on and so forth. So they both work together. They come out week. It's basically a weekly series. So if you count it as one series, it's a weekly series. And basically the mutants have gotten themselves a nation. So the island, there's an island, Krakoa. It's a mutant nation. Xavier has kind of shown himself as a world leader. They've developed medication that they're trying to make deals with the human population so that they recognize them as a separate nation. These medications do weird fucking things. So one is like a super drug. It's a super antibiotic that will adapt and cure any illness. One is a drug that will cure any mental illness. And one is a drug that will give you, give humans 5 additional years of life. Now that's the odd one, because I don't know how the fuck you calculate that. Like, and it's super easy to fucking prove, because I'd be like, oh, here's this pill, and you take it, and 5 years later, I'd be like, hey, you're still alive, it worked, right? Like,
here's the pill again.
Yeah, how the fuck do I know that that's why I'm still alive, right? So like, who knows? But anyway, people have fallen for it, and they've made deals with different governments. Everybody's like, okay, well, you're a nation now, whatever. But the coolest thing about this is establishing a new status quo. Charles Xavier's longtime love interest is revealed to be a mutant. Moira McTaggart was his human girlfriend for the longest time, but they've just revealed that she's a mutant. Her superpower, I call it New Life Plus. New Life Plus is my take on New Game Plus, but it's like for life. You know what I mean? Like, so like you live your life, you die, you go back, you live your life again with all the knowledge that you had, you know, in your mm-hmm. previous life. And so she's been through like 10 lives, and she's retained the knowledge from all 10 of them, and she keeps trying to make the world a better place. So she's fucking cool as shit. And she's revealed this to Xavier, and like they're like doing everything that they can. And like she's actually, they've got Magneto on the team now. Apocalypse, one of the fucking craziest villains of X-Men villains of all time, is now fucking sided with Charles Xavier and doing like good shit for the world. And it's super interesting. It's crazy. It's so crazy that you gotta love it. And you know, from these books, once it's finished, they're launching into a whole new like group of X books, and they all look phenomenal. There's an Excalibur book, that's one that has Apocalypse in it, and you know, Psylocke, and well, Betsy Braddock, not the other one. And you know, a whole bunch of people in that one. Then there's X-Force, and there's X-Men, which is basically the whole Summers family. His father, his wife, his sister, well, not sister, his brother, and you know, his kids and shit. Well,
basically,
like that.
If you're like an X-Men fan, like shit's about to get real.
It's about to go fucking crazy. And if you haven't jumped on yet, do it. Find a way to get these books. They're selling out. Like they are fucking. You can't find them. You go, and you look for them, and they're not on the shelf, man. They're gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
So find a way to get them, get your hands on them, look on eBay. If you can buy them, even if it's an elevated cost, if it's 10, 20 bucks for an issue, spend the money now, because once they start releasing movies, I'm sure they're going to be using Hickman's stories as a model for some of the shit that they're putting out on film. And you don't want to be left behind. These are books that are going to go through the roof and can make you some money if you plan on selling them, or can be prized parts of your collection.
There you go. Yo, check out X-Men. Obviously, you know, Cooley's expressed the importance as well as like how awesome it's going to be. Dude, I have not checked out these books, so I got to get on that shit. Talking about things that are actually coming out as far as like comic book world and just, dude, let's just talk about like who owns Marvel and who owns Star Wars, which is who?
Who owns everything?
Disney, bro. Disney is coming out with Disney Plus in November. If you guys haven't, if you're just sitting there being like, ah, man, like, fuck Disney. I don't give a shit about Disney. I don't care. Well, dude, guess what? Something that you watch and you care about is owned by Disney. Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically what's going on. So, they own everything. So,
fuck Disney. I watch Hulu. Guess what? Hulu,
yeah, they own
Hulu's
Hulu.
Owned by Disney.
Yeah, fuck that. I like Marvel. They own all Marvel. So, I mean, like, you like Star Wars? Star Wars. So,
you like Alien?
Alien. You like Predator? Predator. Mm-hmm. So, basically, like, Disney has its dick in you in some way. So, basically, so what I would say is, sign up for Disney Plus, because if you like any of the shit we just mentioned and more, it could be all yours for how much per month, Cooley?
$6.99.
$6.99, but
$12.99 with Hulu.
Yep.
And ESPN Plus. So if you like sports, college sports in particular, ESPN Plus is a great way to follow.
So for the full package, it's how much?
For the full package, it's $12.99. You get three streaming services.
$12.99 for all that. We are literally promoting Disney, but it doesn't matter because it's not like they needed this anyway. I'm telling you, it is the best shit. I'm going to sign up because, like, I already paid for Hulu, so what I'm going to do is cancel Hulu and then sign up through Disney Plus and get that anyway and cancel my sports package because I'll get it through Disney anyway.
Correct.
And 90% of the stuff that I watched through Netflix, well, maybe 80%, was, like, all the Marvel stuff.
Right.
Now they own Marvel. When this all that stuff, like, so Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, The Defenders,
Luke Cage. Still got to keep Netflix, though.
Yeah, you still got to keep Netflix.
I mean, they come out with so many good... original content, so much good original content. You got to keep it. And I mean, everybody's got something for you. Prime.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, Prime, Netflix, way, Hulu. You're going to be able to get 90% or 80% of the stuff that you actually need through Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a no brainer. I mean, like if you have kids, like I literally have a kid, which everybody knows now, like honestly, Disney is where it's at. She's going to be watching all those movies. I mean, I named my kid Ariel for crying out loud. I mean, like, she's going to be watching Little Mermaid. So this is, and it's all that stuff is going to be accessible. Anything Disney has released is going to be accessible to you in a digital format. So there's no reason for you not to actually jump on this for that low price of $12.99. I think you should do it. I'm going to do it. And if you don't do it, too bad. I'm still doing it.
Where's my check?
Exactly.
Where's my check, Disney?
Oh my God! Now speaking, go ahead. I'm sorry.
They released a trailer for The Mandalorian. That looks like fire. They announced that there's going to be a Rogue One series. So there's going to be a series set in the Rogue One period for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Based on Cassian Andor, and the I forget the droid's name, but the one that's played by your boy Alan Tudyk.
Oh, I don't know his name.
I don't know if Alan Tudyk is coming back, but it would make sense because Disney has the money to give him. So. Dude, like, that's going to be awesome. That's going to be a lot of fun.
K2SO.
Yeah, K2SO. Thank you.
Yeah.
They're also going to release an Obi-Wan series. This was announced recently. That's going to have Ewan McGregor back in the lead. That follows Obi-Wan after the events of Revenge of the Sith. And before the events of New Hope.
I'll tell you right now, if you are a Star Wars fan, all I have heard is that you need to get to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge because it is phenomenal. If you don't know what that is, it's the new Disney park that just opened. And dude, I mean, just from looking at this picture, that pretty much says it all.
Oh yeah,
this place looks is to scale ridiculous.
It looks amazing, and you gotta go and whatnot. But if you plan on doing the experience, like where you stay at the hotel and whatnot, yeah, good luck. Because first of all, you need to be able to get a spot. And once you do, you need to be able to fork over $3,000 for yourself and $3,000 for whoever's going with you. And if it's a family event, fuck right off because I'm not doing that.
seriously, a lot of VIPs are.
I want to, but I'm going to wait until it's reasonable, which it may never be because if it's selling like hotcakes at $3,000, I might never get to experience it.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait about 10 years, bro.
It's a bucket list for me. Like, I might wait until I'm ready to cash out. Like, when it's like, oh, I'm on my deathbed.
You're not going to be able to enjoy it,
I'll just call Make-A-Wish, and I'll be like, yo, my last wish is to go to this thing. And they'll be like, all right.
So, your Make-A-Wish is just going to be like you're dying of old age? Like, what are you talking about? They're not going to pay for that.
You can't do Make-A-Wish for that?
Nah, man. You're just old.
The fuck, bro? That's discrimination.
Discrimination.
So
I'm telling you, Galaxy's Edge, bro, looks ridiculous.
Galaxy's Edge looks awesome. All the Star Wars shit on Disney Plus looks great. They've announced so many series for Disney Plus that I'm like my head spinning. She-Hulk, Moon Knight.
Yeah, all that. Which Keanu Reeves is rumored to be Moonlight.
Well, they're in talks with him to play something, and nobody knows what it is yet, so they haven't announced it, but everybody's been saying Moon Knight would be perfect for him. The only thing that keeps me from thinking that that's going to be the case is that it's a series, like a television series, on Disney Plus, but it's Disney. They can pay him.
Who knows?
It's Disney. They can pay him. They got Ewan McGregor for Obi-Wan, and that's a series.
Yeah, he killed it.
So whatever, they got all the stars from the Marvel shows. Yep. I mean, the Marvel movies to be in the Marvel shows. Hawkeye is going to be there. You got, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier. Those two guys are going to be in the series. You got Elizabeth Olsen that's going to be in Scarlet. Well, is what is it called? WandaVision, which is going to be a. It's interesting. It's going to be a sitcom.
Yeah, yeah.
They announced that it'll be a sitcom, crazy. Which is cool to me because they're treating it like a like an I Love Lucy kind of thing, which is. Like, I've never thought that that could, like, actually exist. And here we are living in an era where I'm, like, ready to boycott Sony for shutting down the Spider-Man team-up that they have with Disney and taking their toys and going home, right? Mm-hmm. I'm ready to stop watching Spider-Man movies, bro. Like, I'm in an era where I can pick and choose what superhero movies I go to. When I was growing up, there were no superhero movies, man. It was like once in a great while something would come out and I'd run to the theater to see it. But now it's like there all the time. It's all over the place. And some people are getting burnt out. I am not one of them.
Yo, I'll tell you one thing right now. Some other big news that you might not be aware of is that Walt Disney, or Disney rather, actually this past month acquired the chain Walt's Roast Beef. They acquired that. I don't know if you know that. Which is completely bullshit. But a lot of you guys for a second were like, wait, why do they need to own Walt's Roast Beef? They own because everything. Because it's Walt, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's... I mean, like... I knew as soon as you said it, I'm like, wow, that's fucking brilliant.
But a lot of you were like, wait a second, is that for real? Why do they... Oh, the Disney, of course they own that, but they don't. But that's how crazy Disney is, right?
I wonder if you're going to get a fancy cursive W now, like, instead of, like, the W that they have.
Just, like, Walt's Roast Beef. You get, like,
Have, like, Walt Disney's face on it and shit. Yeah.
If you order like 1,000 Walt's Roast Beef sandwiches, you get like a pass to the Galaxy's Edge. Like, how brilliant would that be? You can literally get another audience of people that would actually go to Walt's Roast Beef more.
Because that would be about $5,000.
Yeah, but they would actually stock up anyway. It's like when you go to Dave and Buster's, you're like, yo, I'm going to spend $1,000 on these tickets to get that video game. But it's like you could have spent $60 and just got it at GameStop. But cool, man. You know, that's an accomplishment for you. Speaking of Disney, they own everything. But guess what they don't own? Netflix. Netflix has been releasing a ton of stuff comedy-wise. They actually just acquired Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, which is great. They actually, one of the most talked about guests recently was Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy recently released the information that he's going to be in. He started filming Coming to America 2. And he's also going to be releasing a new stand-up special that comes out on Netflix. And he's also going to be hosting SNL. So Eddie Murphy's making a comeback. He's had a little bit of resurgence. I'm excited about that. But one of the other things Netflix recently released, which is getting a lot of press, is Dave Chappelle's latest stand-up special called Sticks and Stones, which I thought was phenomenal. I talked to a buddy of mine who said that a lot of people are actually pissed about it because they didn't feel like it was stand-up, which I don't really know exactly what you think stand-up is, but this is exactly pretty much exactly what stand-up should be.
So he was standing up on a stage with a microphone with an audience in front of him telling jokes.
Yeah.
Sounds like stand-up to me.
I mean, a lot of people, there were some people that just had problems with it.
I think people didn't like the political nature of it. They didn't like the way that he approached it and how he didn't give a fuck about not offending people. But again, it's comedy. I think it's obvious that he's not 100% like that person that like doesn't give a fuck about, you know, people with a cause. You know what I mean? Like, he's not shitting on anybody's cause. He's just up there saying things that can make people laugh, right? And he's doing it in a way that so a lot of jokes, a lot of good jokes, and a lot of good comedians will it's shit that catches you off guard. All right, it's not necessarily shock value because I wasn't shocked by any of it, but it caught me off guard. There were things that caught me off guard, and I was like, oh shit. And it's like, and the best jokes are the ones that make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, right? Like, for laughing at them.
And that's the best. I mean, there's a an article that I've read, which it really basically kind of captures exactly, you know, what I think he was going for. And one of them says, in his new Netflix special, Sticks and Stones, the object of Chappelle's commentary are folks ostensibly making their personal tragedies everyone's problem by using them to perpetrate career death and reputation homicide upon celebrities. These people, he tells us, have made him a victim blamer. And also he said, he guns for two men at the center of Leaving Neverland who allege that late pop music idol Michael Jackson molested them when they were 7 and 10 years old. And cancel culture advocates who took aim at his personal friends like Kevin Hart and another A-list comic he was good friends with before he died in that terrible masturbation accident, which is Louis C.K. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how, like, literally nobody was hurt in that, but he still was a victim of the Me Too movement.
Right.
I also, you know, he, this is another great point out. They say that, this is about a paragraph right here, but I think it was brilliantly stated. Then there's the easily offended alphabet people, his shorthand for the LGBTQ community, particularly, as he says, the confusing T's, the Me Too movement organizers of school shooting drills. They've all gotten out of hand and need to be taken down a peg. Chappelle even takes a moment to stereotypically mimic Asians, which he diffuses later on by reminding the audience that his wife is Asian. The entirety of Sticks and Stones is structured around such logic by signaling to those who are true believers in his genius that it's all just a joke. Only words. This earns his ability to punch down as the parlance goes. And this is my point, is that he does such a brilliant job, and this is why he's a brilliant comedian, of taking things that you normally feel like would be pushing the boundaries and be like, oh my God, I can't believe he's making fun of that. But by the but when the punchline hits, he still has the audience on his side. And right. I think that is perfect. Like, there aren't a lot of comedians out there that can do that with such grace, and he does it perfectly. And, you know, he does this really funny joke about, you know, the transgender community in a sense where he's like, you know, I think it's funny that he's like, he basically says transgender people need to actually take responsibility for his jokes because he feels like, I just think it's like, it's something I can't ignore making fun of. And this is one of my favorite bits in his stand-up right here.
Because I didn't come up with this idea on my own. This idea that a person can be born in the wrong body. But they have to admit, that's a fucking hilarious predicament. It's really fucking funny. If it happened to me, you'd laugh, wouldn't you? That wouldn't be funny if it happened to me? I think it would be. What if it did? What if I was Chinese, but born in this nigga body? That's not funny. And for the rest of my life, I had to go around making that face. Hey, everybody, I'm Chinese! And everyone get mad. Stop making that face. That's offensive. What? This is how I feel inside.
I have to be honest, man. When I saw that, I think I rewound it about 3 times because I was laughing so hard. I mean, like, he really talks about like how if an interesting quote-unquote predicament that is. But I mean, like, he still had everybody laughing because of the way he makes it about it. And you can't fault him because his wife's also Asian. So it's not like he's racist against Asian people.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, like, it's... Look, there are things that happen that are funny.
They are. Exactly.
I can watch somebody fall.
And you're concerned for them, but
it's also funny. I'm concerned for them, but it's funny.
Right, right.
It's funny because it came out of nowhere. You're looking at it and you're like, oh shit, that's fucking hilarious. Like, and if you're in front of that person, you might be holding it in, but you know you want to laugh, right?
Right, right, right.
And I mean, like, I don't think the transgender state of being is instantly hilarious. Like, it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not something that, you know, I look at and I go, ha ha, that's such a funny situation you're in.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
But the joke that he made was hilarious.
It's funny. It's exactly. Hilarious.
Like because of the spin that he put on it.
Exactly.
Like, he didn't stand up there and say, "Oh yeah, imagine if I was a girl trapped in this body," right? And then he starts talking about that. Like, that's
an ethnicity.
It's not funny. The ethnicity thing, like bringing race into it, was fucking hilarious, and it was brilliant, and it was like, and you instantly get where he's coming from, and he's gone. He's gone on record, even in this stand-up, saying, like, hey, you know, I've got a ton of friends that are gay and, you know, from every, and he said, and the only thing he said, I don't have any transgender friends because they hate me. And that's when he goes into this thing. But, yes, like you said, like he's the master of saying things that can make you uncomfortable, that make you feel like, why am I laughing at this? But at the same time, he twists it just enough that it's not terrible. It's not anything that you can like fault him for, you know what I mean? Or be angry with him for. So he's a master. I fucking love this guy. He's brilliant. One of my favorite bits in this was the one when he was talking about the Chappelle show.
Yeah.
And the I forget the who it is, but it's the people that like check.
I know what you're talking about. Where they're like, oh,
he's like, I can't say the word.
Yeah, it's like the really vulgar word for somebody that is gay, I guess that you would say.
Like,
yeah.
Why can't I say that? And he was like, well, because you're not gay. And he was like, yeah, well, I'm not an
N-word either.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, why can I say the N-word? He was like, he comes back and he says, why can't I say that, but I can say the N-word with impunity.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
And she says, well, because you're not gay. And he's like, well, I'm not an N-word either, right? Like,
yeah, it was brilliant.
So, and it was great. And it was,
made so much sense.
But
too.
He left it at that.
He left it at that. Yeah.
And moved on. And like his, that's the brilliance of his comedy, is you hear that and you're like, and everything he says makes you go, huh. Yeah. But also makes you die laughing while you're wondering and pondering.
I mean, he's great. I mean, and I really like the fact that he actually, you know, there's not a lot of stand-up comedians out there that, I mean, well, okay. There are stand-up comedians that have actually come to Louis C.K.'s defense. And I was a big fan of Louis C.K. He was probably my favorite comedian. And I also I was lucky enough to meet the guy. Super nice to me. But, you know, I like that he pointed out the fact and made a joke about the fact that, like, you know, Louis C.K. was a victim of this Me Too movement and necessarily didn't do anything wrong except, like, like masturbate on himself, and then people got freaked out and all of a sudden they took away like all of his shit, you know. So but he makes a really funny joke about that. But I mean, all a side note, if you guys are looking to see something that really just, you know, plays with boundaries but also is really hilarious, check out Sticks and Stones on Netflix, Dave Chappelle's latest special. I highly recommend it. That is all I got for this episode of the Red Bear Podcast, man. If you guys, you know, are looking to figure out when those giveaways are going to happen that we talked about, stay tuned next week. We'll have all the info on that.
Yes.
So with that being said, we will see you guys in a couple weeks. And that's all I got.
Yeah, man. Football tonight.
Football. And that's where we're going to end it. Later.